Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Friends with Money, Money Magazine's podcast to help you earn, save, and achieve your financial goals. My name is Tom Watson, a senior journalist here at Money Magazine. And as always, it is a pleasure to be with you. Well, we are only halfway through the year at this stage, but boy, oh boy, what a wild ride investors have had so far. I don't know about you, dear listeners, but there's been more than a few days when I've logged into my investment app only to be confronted with a big old red negative sign, and then I've quietly logged out, backed away. A week later, though, things will have totally changed, so there you go. That's 2025 in a nutshell. Enough about me, though. As has become a bit of a tradition on Friends with Money over the past couple of years, today we are going to undertake our half-yearly review. We're going to talk about some of the causes of the volatility that we've seen in financial markets so far in 2025, what the impact has been on various asset classes, and as much as we can, we'll take a bit of a look at the forecast ahead. But in this world, who knows what's going to happen? I'm very pleased to say that joining me today to dive into those areas and more is Jonathan Sheed, Head of Investments Australia at State Street Investment Management. Jonathan, a very warm welcome to you. It's a pleasure to have you on Friends with Money.
Thank you, Tom. Delighted to be here.
It's great to have you on, mate. Before we take a look into, I guess, some specific asset classes, I think it would be really useful for everyone if you could set the scene for us a bit. You know, what are some of the macroeconomic and the geopolitical factors that have really impacted markets so far this year and, I guess, created some of that volatility that we've all started to become a bit more familiar with?
Yeah, look, in a word, it's tariffs, and tariffs isn't the only word, but it's certainly the biggest word in the first 6 months. But I think it's worth reflecting back why tariffs was such a marker in the first 6 months. And if you go back over the 5 years prior, so starting from COVID through to the end of last year, we obviously had economic contraction with COVID. We had a strong rebound the next year. And then we had inflation come roaring back, but economic growth held up despite, you know, rapid increases in interest rates and so on. Economic growth held up. And so coming into this year, at the start of the year, financial markets were thinking, is inflation really under control or isn't it? Can interest rates continue coming down? Is the labor market going to hold up? So markets were on tenterhooks to some extent. And so when the tariff announcements came, and everyone knew they were coming, by the way, but the size of those tariffs was so large that markets got spooked about what was going to happen to inflation in the US in particular, and what was going to happen to global growth. And that was the context for that huge sell-off we saw at the beginning of April. Since then, we've had a lot more certainty. Tariffs have started to fade as that driving force. And in fact, markets are up above where they were before that announcement in early April. So tariffs is certainly the biggest, I think, geopolitical factor in the first 6 months. There have been a few others, though, that investors might have missed in all the noise around what's happening in the US. For example, in Europe, Germany eased some of their restrictions on government spending. And we think longer term that's going to be great for Europe on infrastructure and defense spending and so on. So that was one a theme that slipped by. AI has been another strong theme over the last 6 months, and that's really played out in a few different areas in financial markets. The first is in the kind of strategic rivalry between the US and China, where DeepSeek and the fact that maybe other players can start to generate real value in AI space started to come to the fore, and China's actually performed very strongly this year. Also, the actual profits from companies in technology who are involved in that revolution. And then finally, the impact on longer-term productivity, both for the broader economy and for corporate profits. So I think that would be the next theme. And the final one I'd just refer to a bit closer to home, perhaps, is the surprising situation we're in now, Tom, where Japan is leading the board on inflation and everyone else is cutting rates, and yet Japan is the one rising. And that's been another significant geopolitical factor, I think, in the last 6 months. So that's what I'm seeing in the first 6 months of the year, Tom.
I'm glad you brought some of those other kind of non-tariff factors up, Jonathan, because like you said, I feel like they get lost in the noise so often. That the announcement that you talked about from Germany being a prime one there, I think. I feel like we could almost start a different podcast to talk about all of this, but we don't have one yet, so we'll continue on. I think I'd love to start getting into some specific asset classes now then, and I think a great place to start would be with equities. Again, we could probably do another entire podcast on how equities have performed this year. So broadly speaking, Jonathan, how have they fared in the first kind of 6 months of 2025?
Well, it was looking pretty ugly in the first week of April, but since then, equities have roared back. And broadly speaking, equities are at higher levels than they were at the end of March. The UK and Europe have actually done better than the US in the first 6 months of the year. However, looking forward, if you look at earnings and sales and those key corporate metrics, the US, we think, is probably looking a bit stronger going into the next 6 to 12 months than perhaps places like Europe and Japan. So I think within equities, while Europe and the UK have had a pretty good run, we probably prefer the US, I think, over the next 6 to 12 months. The US is looking fully valued, but it's not crazy valuations. And some of the recovery in the US wasn't just limited to those Mag 7, those very, very large stocks. And in fact, more broadly within equity markets, you know, we're looking for that recovery to continue in some of the sectors that have been a bit neglected. So smaller companies, for example, or within emerging markets and some of those other areas. So that's broadly what's happened within the equity market over the first 6 months of the year. Of course, there's a lot more happening below the surface.
Well, maybe I can pick your brains very briefly on what's kind of happened close to home in Australia. How have Australian markets, I guess, performed compared to the US and the rest of the world? Has it been a slightly rosier start to 2025?
The Australian market has done okay. I mean, clearly the Australian market is closely linked to what's happening in China. And so Australia is caught in this tension between our largest trading partner and strategic rivalry with what's happening in the US. So the Australian market's done okay over the first 6 months of the year. I think for Australia and a few other countries in the Asia Pacific region, the rate of earnings growth compared to the price you pay is not something that we're seeing as hugely attractive at the moment. So Australia, along with other countries in the region, are probably not our favoured places to go. I think if you speak to your financial advisor, most financial advisors would suggest investors do have a core allocation to the Australian equity market. And at State Street, we would certainly support that. But it's not an area where I think in the current environment we'd be going aggressively overweight.
Excellent point. Well, let's move on then. As I said, we could talk about equities all day, but we can't, or perhaps we shouldn't. So let's move on to fixed income now then, Jonathan, if you don't mind. So broadly speaking, again, how has fixed income as an asset class, I guess, fared so far this year?
It's done fine. If you look at long-term interest rates, both in Australia and the US, you know, they're kind of bouncing around somewhere between 4 and 5%. Now, a 4 to 5% yield when inflation's running at 2 to 3, I mean, that's not a bad number, right? So fixed interest markets are looking reasonably attractive. The problem is that if you lock your money up for 10 years at 4 to 5% and interest rates go the wrong way, you can actually have a capital loss. So we do quite like shorter dated fixed income. Things like floating rate notes, for example, where you can get an extra 50 basis points to 1% above the prevailing interest rates in money markets. Those sort of opportunities we think are quite positive. Otherwise, we quite like fixed income. Just be a bit careful about that. Those longer dated securities if we get inflation proving to be stubborn and interest rates staying higher for longer. There is one actually, Tom, at the risk of turning this into a two-hour podcast. I think the fixed interest chart that has caught my attention is what's happened to the 30-year bond rate in the US. Now, that might sound a little bit esoteric, but the 30-rate bond yield in the US, the gap between that and the 10-year bond rate in the US has been steadily climbing. This is one chart in the first 6 months of the year that doesn't look like a V-shape or a upside-down mountain or something like that. It's a steady climb, and that, we think, reflects the market's concern about things like the long-term sustainability of the US deficit and things like that. So, but that's a little bit esoteric, Tom.
And again, without turning this into a politics podcast, there's some very relevant things going through American Congress right now, isn't there? So we'll wait and see what happens there with that potentially big, beautiful bill. We've touched on equities, we touched on fixed income, but I also want to get your thoughts on gold as well, Jonathan. I feel like I saw tons of headlines last year about gold prices and record highs for gold. But how's it fared, I guess, in 2025?
Yeah, so gold has had a really strong run over the first 6 months of the year. It's gone from $2,600 an ounce US up to over $3,300 an ounce. That's an increase of sort of 25 to 30%, which is really significant. There's one caveat I'll place there, in that everyone talks about the gold price in US dollar terms, but the US dollar has actually been weakening over that period. So if you were to look for an Australian investor, it'd be a 20% return. It's still a big number, but the return is not going to be quite as large. I think the second thing about gold is not only the return, but also the way it's behaved in times of a market crisis. And I think what the market noticed was the last big crisis we had earlier this year, bonds and equities kind of went the same way. And so this idea of diversifying, where you don't have all your eggs in one basket, and if one asset class performs poorly, then the other one will do well, that didn't really work for bonds and equity. And I think a lot of the interest in gold comes from investors who are trying to find an effective diversifier within their portfolio. And certainly at State Street, that's something we've looked at gold to do, is to provide that diversification. Other reasons for the increase are things like central bank buying. We've certainly seen plenty of that. Physical gold, particularly in places like India and China. It's a very active market. It's a big part of the global gold market. There's been buying there. And also within managed funds and ETFs, we've seen more buying of gold bullion within those kind of investments as well. So we think that $3,000 US is probably a reasonable floor going forward. For it to fall below that, you'd need to have a real de-risking in the geopolitical landscape. So, you know, a fantastic thawing of relations between China and the US, for example. That's the kind of environment where you might see gold slip back.
Well, again, given the year that we've had, who knows what's going to happen in the future in regards to that and other things. Jonathan, I feel like you've already given us plenty of food for thought already in terms of what might lie ahead. But before we, I guess, start to wrap things up for today, is there anything else that you'd like to leave us with in terms of financial markets and the outlook ahead for them in the months ahead?
Look, I think, Tom, we're still a little bit cautious. So we think the global economy will have a soft landing, but there are risks to the downside. And so, you know, overall, we are underweight equities in the short term, but those positions can change very quickly. And I think, Tom, for longer-term investors, you're better off speaking to your financial advisor, finding the right mix for you, and then don't do too much to it. And in fact, our longer-term model portfolios that we offer to clients through financial advisors, we actually didn't change the allocations at all in the last 12 months. We toyed with maybe putting some emerging markets in there. We toyed with a couple of other things, but actually decided to leave them unchanged. So if you're someone who speaks to a financial advisor and doesn't change things that often, well, don't worry. Certainly at State Street, we think you're in good company.
Certainly what I've been doing, sitting on my hands, and maybe I should add logging out of my app as well to make sure I don't get too stressed out by everything that's happening and just think about the long term rather than the blips along the way. This has been absolutely fantastic. It's been a pleasure to have you on. So thank you so much for your time, for giving us such a comprehensive overview of what's happened and what we might look forward to in the months ahead. So as I said, it's been a pleasure, and we'll look forward to having you back on again soon, perhaps to come and give you a score in terms of some of those forecasts that you've given us, and see how you've done.
Looking forward to it, Tom. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of the Friends of Money podcast. But don't forget to jump on our website, moneymag.com.au, for your daily dose of financial news. Or you can go grab yourself a copy of the latest edition of Money Magazine in all good newsagents. As always, Friends of Money will be right back in your podcast feed next week. So until then, my name is Tom Watson. Goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.